continuing our study of the process of working out equality as a discipline of integral yoga, we have noted that there are two sides to this equality. One, the passive or the negative side, and the other, the dynamic and the positive side. The first, the passive type of equality, is usually the first step, and it consists of three steps, one after the other: endurance, indifference, and submission. First, we learn to endure what we can't help. Second, we cultivate indifference to whatever comes. And third, we learn to submit. Indeed, not submit to the events in a mood of resignation, but submit to the higher will, submit to God, submit to the universal will. In other words, submission to something higher and larger than our ego self. Now, the first step that we take is one of endurance. One does not need to be a yogi or a practitioner of yoga to cultivate endurance. Life teaches us to endure, whether we want it or not. Each one is visited by circumstances and events which force one to learn in the school of life this lesson of endurance. And as we learn to endure, we find that the one result of this continuous effort at endurance is that our power to endure increases. We never break down. Nature sustains us in our effort, and the power to endure with which we start goes on strengthening itself, and at a certain stage we are ourselves amazed to find that the power to endure, to sustain ourselves in the midst of adversities, goes on increasing. We do not break down as feared, but there is a certain elasticity about this endurance which goes on extending itself. And as this habit of endurance establishes itself, we sail into the second step, and that is we become aware of two parts in our nature. One, the surface mind, the surface will, which complain, which like to avoid, which suffer, and behind them or above the surface mind, the surface will, we become aware of a deeper will, of a larger poise of mind, which bears patiently. It tolerates while the surface being frets and fumes. This dichotomy in our nature becomes more and more pronounced as we persist in the discipline, till we can at will switch over to our deeper or higher nature, and from there impose our will on the normally reacting surface nature to desist from being childish. In course of time, the lower nature or the surface nature, habituated to react in an accustomed way, begins to change. It yields, and the higher nature assumes the lower one in itself, and the customary reactions cease to be prominent. Gradually, it is the higher nature that establishes itself, enlarges its range, and remolds the lower nature. These are the three steps that we become aware once we start the discipline of endurance. Endurance is largely a matter of will, exercise of will. The second step of indifference is based upon knowledge, even as endurance is based upon will. The discipline of indifference to contact and impacts is based essentially upon knowledge. The mind knows, the enlightened part of the mind knows, that the reactions of our being to life contacts are a matter of habit. They need not be so. And as the consciousness grows, as the consciousness gets enlightened, the reactions can be different. And it knows also that the right reactions are not what are evident, but something else. This knowledge, whether we get it from our own enlightened part, from perception, or from those whose word we take for authority, that knowledge backs up this indifference. And the first step that we take in this part of the discipline is that we decide that these habits of ignorance, these habits which have been caused by a state of consciousness or a state of mind where knowledge is absent, these habits have to be cast off. We must not react. Whatever happens, whether the contacts are pleasant or unpleasant, we should be totally indifferent. This determination comes from a knowledge that these reactions are not inevitable, that we can enter into a state of consciousness where no reactions can be evoked from us, and the old habits have to be cast off. Here also, as this new habit of indifference starts taking root, we become aware of a division in our being. The surface being, the surface mind, running into the usual modes, grooves, and reacting, while a calmer and a more peaceful and a silent part of the mind refuses to be hustled. It watches. It does not give reaction. Either it concentrates on something else or it is self-wrapped, refusing to take notice of what is happening. There is, again here also, the ding-dong battle, struggle, the lower trying to upset the inner poise, the inner poise trying to impose itself on the outer surface mentality. But in due course, the deeper or the higher mind prevails and the lower one is educated. But it is a gradual and a long process. And when this part of the mind that refuses to react, that has decided to be indifferent, that gains ground, one becomes aware of an imperturbable tranquility and a peace that cannot be disturbed by the nature of contacts, the nature of visitations from universal life. It may come through individuals, it may come through a play of forces, but the mind insists on remaining above, overseeing things, not getting involved, not reacting positively or negatively. After endurance based upon will, indifference based upon knowledge is submission. And submission, as I said, is essentially based upon the element of devotion. Devotion to what is higher than oneself. Recognition of a will larger than one's own puny individual will, the universal will. Once the seeker starts regarding this will, God's will, the divine will at work in the universe, and begins to surrender, submit oneself to its working, workings, direct and indirect. Indirect through other wills, directly through the universal forces. The ego knot gets loosened. Instead of referring every event, every happening, every contact to the ego point of reference, one begins to refer to either the standpoint of the universal will or the will of God, whether it is universal or transcendent. And one takes joy in submitting oneself to the will of God. In the beginning, it may look as if it is a fatalistic attitude to accept what comes as the will of God, to go through without complaining. But gradually, as the tendency deepens, there is a certain joy, an inner happiness in submitting oneself to the divine's will. Here also, as in the earlier two steps, there is a division. The deeper or the higher part of, say, the heart, the emotions, they insist upon keeping the higher or the larger, the vaster will before it. But the surface nature goes on reacting in its usual way. It takes considerable time and effort to educate this outer nature into accepting the discipline or the joyous discipline of the inner nature, to submit one's, to submit itself to the Divine's will. So these are the three steps which make up the what is called the passive equality. Passive equality is enough as long as one is engaged in an individual yoga of liberation. For the aim in such a type of yoga is to liberate oneself from the lower nature, liberate oneself from the bonds of ego. And for these ends, a passive equality, an equality by which one arrives at a state of peace, imperturbable peace, that is enough. But that is hardly enough for a seeker of a yoga like the integral yoga, which insists not only on liberation, but proceeds with liberation as the first capital step towards transformation, towards perfection, of which transformation is a part. Here, the return of vibrations, reactions, in the equality of spirit is not enough. After acquiring that capacity of reacting only in knowledge, only in the love of God, only with the will not involved in surface nature, one begins to see that the normal reactions of nature, our nature, are due to the simple fact that our life is led in ignorance. Our consciousness is covered with ignorance, the shadow of nations, and every contact, every movement is to that extent falsified by the surrounding ignorance and even the innate ignorance of the limited surface mind. If we are to get beyond the possibility of reacting in ignorance, of living in ignorance, we have to take positive steps. And the first positive step in acquiring active equality is to gain the knowledge of the Divine in all. That the Divine is not merely within us, not merely transcendent of the universe, but is there in all forms, all movements, all in the universe, there is God. Once you have this knowledge that God is in all, not only as a mental theory, not only as a metaphysic, but as a living knowledge which influences your attitudes, your moods, your movements in life, it makes a world of difference. You do not seek to avoid things. You do not seek to run away from contacts simply because they are not pleasurable to the senses. You see that everything originates from God, that there is a purpose in every movement, in every contact. And this brings about a revolutionary change in one's attitude to the world, to the impacts from the world. All is gone. From whom is he to shrink thereafter? Asks the one of the oldest Upanishads. For one who has realized that he is one with the Self, that Self is the Self of all, and all live in the Self, that Self. From what has he to shrink? If he shrinks, it means his knowledge is not complete. His realization of the Self or the One Divine is incomplete. This is the first step to acquire that knowledge and to live in that knowledge. Once that knowledge is there as part of our consciousness, there is the aspect of will, a will for equal acceptance. Since there is the mental knowledge, the accepted knowledge, the will has to be trained in the ways of equal acceptance. Once we make a determination and exert our will in accepting things with a certain equality, without getting upset, without getting overjoyed, we feel a growth of strength, a growth of will, and the strength backing it up. It is a slow process, but a steady process. And the next step is, once the will gets accustomed to greet things with an equality, after a time, one begins to take joy, get delight in fronting contacts with equality, because one knows they are the visits of the cosmic Godhead through so many contacts. One greets the Godhead in every contact, and there is an inevitable joy in that step. So, knowledge, will, delight. Here also, one goes through a stage of division in the being. The outer nature is dragged down again and again by its old habits. The inner will insists upon asserting its determination of equal acceptance. But ultimately, the higher will prevails as it has to, because always the lower one yields to the higher, the smaller one to the larger. That is the law of evolution. That's the law of life. And as one begins to take joy, one understands the saying of the Upanishads that there is an underlying delight in all things. Nothing could breathe or live without this ether of delight. We begin to understand the whole science of aesthesis, which looks for the rasa in things, the sap of delight, even in movements, scenes, activities that may look as painful, those of struggle and suffering. In each movement in the universe, there is underlying it a basic delight, and it is for that delight that it has been manifested. We fail to tap this current of delight, this source of joy, because of our ignorance, because of our limited consciousness. once we free ourselves from our involvement in the limited surface consciousness and extend our being into a larger ambience, the vibrations are quite different. Our reactions are still more different. And what is called the rasa in things, the sap of delight, comes naturally. We get a glimpse into this possibility when we witness on the stage dramas, plays, in which the tragic element plays a notable part. When some part of the being enjoys that, cynics may say you can enjoy because you know very well that you are not involved in it. But still, a refined mind knows, even in shedding tears of sympathy, they are tears of catharsis. They make one light. They make one nearer the purer levels of one's being. And an active equality brings in this element of feeling the rasa in things very naturally. Active equality means all these things in the realm of will, in the realm of feeling. How does it feel in the realm of knowledge? Normally, our knowledge or mental life is seen to be covered with ignorance, characterized by ignorance, proceeding through error, hoping to arrive one day at true knowledge. In a person who has acquired this active equality, there is no shrinkage from ignorance. He knows ignorance is not absolute. He does not fly away saying that it is an illusion. He knows ignorance is only a deformation. And if the deforming elements are removed, the truth will shine. So he takes on whatever segment of ignorance of the universal life is given to him to embrace. He sees, studies and sees what are the elements that deform. And the elements that deform, the elements that misguide, they are the errors. Errors also, there is no finality about these errors. Errors are, after all, wrong placements of knowledge. These are corrected. Ignorance is tolerated. An attitude of understanding is cultivated, and those who are ignorant, movements that proceed from ignorance, are fronted with this sense of understanding, toleration, what Mother called charity. The errors are seen for what they are and patiently corrected, and one arrives at true knowledge. Even in this true knowledge, there is no passionate attachment or involvement in what one thinks to be a true knowledge. In an attitude or a poise of active, dynamic equality, one knows that knowledge is endless. Each plane, each part of a plane has its own truth. As one develops in consciousness, as one grows in stature, the truth also grows. So one does not shut oneself into ideas or idea truths for all time. One allows oneself to expand. One allows the horizon of knowledge also to expand. And this expansion of knowledge goes on till the true and the perfect knowledge is attained at the Gnostic level. A long way is to be travelled from the mind to the borders of the supermind. And it is inevitable that knowledge is always expanded, extended, and a seeker who has that active sense of equality, he assists in this process without regret for one's pet theories and notions to be left behind, to be replaced by knowledge, by elements of knowledge which one had thought to be wrong. The expansion and the growth of knowledge is made into a joyous movement. Then in the realm of will, we have said in the realm of feeling, in the realm of knowledge, in the realm of will, there is this new attitude, active equality, reflects itself as an understanding attention. Why things happen in the way they do? Why certain forces act in the way we fear, in the way we like them to be? An enlightened will, poised in this active equality, identifies itself with things that are happening in order to know, in order to go to the roots of those movements, understand them, and tune itself to the truth behind other wills, other movements, whether they are ignorant or half-ignorant. Because it knows the truth that seeks to be delivered from the external movements. And its eye is always there behind those movements. It is here that the active element comes. A passive activity will just tolerate there, saying that there must be some truth behind it. But an active and a dynamic equality, that consciousness, characterized by it, it insists on going behind the movements, knowing the truth, and thereafter bearing them with an understanding, helpful, dynamic equality. It goes without saying that in this yoga, both the passive and the active equality are necessary. One leads to the other, not indeed in a logical way of sequence, but as it happens in all movements of yoga, in simultaneous ways. A step gained in passive equality helps one to forge ahead in the sense of active equality, and vice versa. Once it is enough that one knows that there are these two wings of equality, and both together take the soaring soul in the heights of the spirit.
What is the difference between the effect of
a weak, passive attitude when it sees hostile attacks coming. It will either, if it is cast in a heroic mold, it will bear it, endure it, holding to its own truth, or it may pray to the divine and submit to the will of the divine, wait upon the will of the divine. But an active equality will see what is the strength behind this hostile attack. What is it that gives room to these hostile elements to enter the atmosphere? And precisely what are the forces that are trying to break through? Once one has that knowledge, one sounds the depths of the soul or the depths of the consciousness to which one is linked to deal with the situation. But it is without rancor, without violence. It is to correct the situation. If in the process of correcting the situation, it is found that the hostile elements are to be eliminated, that also is done, but without reaction.
And the effect on the
person? Effect. No effect will be left on his consciousness. Ah, I see. Naturally, either he has to change or to be eliminated, or he will be given a long rope, the other person. It depends upon the steps taken against the hostile elements, the nature of the hostile elements, whether they are just forces or elements or beings. Each case differs.
Questions.
Yes.
This question, we have a detailed a higher being and an outer being, the inner being. With all of the principle of the psychic being, yes, that psychic is trying to manifest, can you connect up those two things?
When I say the inner being, you can take it that it includes the psychic being. The psychic being is the leader of our inner selves. But there are individuals or natures in whom the psychic is not tapped at all. They may just ascend in their consciousness through the mental levels and become aware of their higher being. They themselves say that we are not conscious of the psychic, we are not conscious of anything here, but we know only what is here. But an integral seeker has to awaken both the aspects, both the ranges, the inner range and the upper range, higher range. And the psychic awakening necessarily is the first step for an integral seeker.
My second question was, can you detail the division between the inner being and the outer being? But I see that you have made actually three, inner being, outer being, and higher being.
No, we can say the surface being and the inner being. But when we say inner, it means the higher ranges also. Or when you speak of higher, it means the inner ranges also. The distinction is really between what is on the surface and what is behind.
Is there any way to map the line of distinction between the two? That where one stops functioning, where the outer being with its own habits stops functioning?
Yes.
The inner
yes, being. Yes. The inner being, for instance, it is not dependent upon outer circumstances. The surface being only goes on reacting. Even thought something else thinks for it. The inner being has its own life. Irrespective of the outer movements, the inner being lives on its own. It is not perturbed, it is not overjoyed by any contacts or anything. But the surface being is always at the mercy. It needs an excitant to feel happy. It needs a pinprick to feel agitated, For everything, it has no existence of its own, worth the name. It is always at the mercy of outer happenings. So this is a simple enough barometer to distinguish the ranges. Here in these things you can't have a clear-cut line. Man's being is such a multiple being that each fuses into the other part. Just as you can't have a clear-cut line dividing the mind from the vital from the physical. Similarly, from the surface and the subliminal, from the surface and the inner, there is not one line or wall as such. They gently fuse into each other. So there is a passage where both appear to be the same. The inner has its outer elements, the outer has its inner elements. But by and large, this is one standard. Whether one is at the mercy of outer things, circumstances, or one lives on one, in oneself. The Upanishads have a very fine phrase. They say there is Atmarati, means taking delight in the self alone. He does not look outside for joy or pleasure or happiness. He does not need anything or anybody. His world, his all bliss is contained in himself. That is a famous phrase which gives the philosophy of spiritual bliss, that one can live in one's soul and be happy without needing the experiences of the senses to live a happy or a joyous life. No, no. Divine will, it is not the will of others. Divine will exists independently of others, because it has been there before the others have come into existence, and it will be there after all the others have been swept away. It may act through the other wills. It is not the other wills. How to distinguish? Discrimination. For instance, there is what is called the time spirit. Time spirit, jajist, is this thing. There may be groups of people who embody that will. You have to recognize it. Because somehow they are open to that will, time spirit, and they manifest it. It is such cases that I had in mind when I spoke of the universal will working through several other wills. So also, the opposite will, the will of the adversary, may embody itself in other groups. So there is where the discrimination has to be exercised. I think our daily life is too small an affair for the universal will to concern itself. But there one has to say only what is the divine will for me. one need not worry about the universal will. The individual divine will, what is it? The divine within me, what is his will? The indweller, what is his will for me? What is his direction for me? That should be an enough perspective.